This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Saturday, June 19th, 2021. I'm Caleb Brown. What's a thing of value in the context of federal elections? Is it just direct contributions of goods or money? Is it a public endorsement of a candidate? What about a particular question and the response to it? It turns out that the answer holds great implications for not just elections, but freedom of speech and foreign policy. Alan Dickerson is a member of the Federal Election Commission. We spoke earlier this week about how the FEC resolves these kinds of questions.
You and I understand what a campaign contribution is, or at least we think we do. It's money given to a campaign that is then under the control of the campaign, and then they use that money to advocate for themselves in an attempt to attract voters to their various policy positions or wishes for the future of government. How has that idea of what constitutes a contribution, how has that changed over time?
Well, I would argue it's changed since the very beginning. And this is always the problem, is that, you know, people have a sense of what these words mean. And I think quite often those senses are very helpful because they give guidance, you know, to people who are trying to go out there and engage in politics. But when Congress, as sometimes happens, when you try to take your general understanding of a concept and make it into law, lots of words get put on pages and complexities arise. So in this particular case, I think what you said is definitely the understanding of a contribution. But the actual law says that it's money or instruments, or basically money, or anything of value given for the purposes of influencing a federal election. And, you know, way back in the beginning, I like to call it the original sin of campaign finance law. You know, the Supreme Court looked at this and they said, well, that can be almost anything.
When you say something of value, we know what money is. We know that there are brisk markets and kinds of property. It's not that complicated to assign some sort of monetary value to those things, but something of value. And you said the Supreme Court had a problem with this characterization.
Well, it did, because, you know, again, if you really want to affect an election, how do it? You lower the unemployment rate. We don't usually think of that as a contribution, right? That's just sound public policy. But, you know, the issue comes, as you say, out of this thing of value concept. And I think for the longest time, this wasn't really a big deal because everyone was operating off of the definition that you gave at the beginning of our conversation. You know, it's either it's money given to the campaign, or it's, you know, the sort of stuff a campaign would purchase anyway. You know, if you give a bunch of stamps to a campaign, everyone's going to recognize that as a contribution, because otherwise the campaign would have had to pay for the stamps. But increasingly, and I think increasingly in the role of the sort of foreign influence debate, people are revisiting that thing of value analysis and trying to see what they can shoehorn in. So we had a case that arose recently that we just resolved yesterday publicly. And the thing of value in that case was going to be an answer at a press conference to a question. So I don't think that's what the Supreme Court thought a contribution was. I don't think that's what Congress had in mind when they passed the law, but that was the recommendation that was given to us by our lawyers. So I can back up a little and kind of set the stage, but that's where it ended up.
So on that point, who is Alexandra Chalupa and what is Chalupa and Associates?
So Chalupa is, the woman is an American national of Ukrainian extraction who is an activist on Ukrainian-American issues and has also worked in a consulting capacity for the Democratic National Committee from time to time. Chalupa and Associates, as you would probably gather, is a company that she uses for the purposes of such consultancy. And she got in trouble recently when a complaint was filed against her saying that she had solicited an illegal foreign contribution in the 2016 election. And there's a long and complicated history that I will not bore you with. But the end of all of this was that she brought to the attention of Ukrainian authorities that Paul Manafort had been hired by the Trump campaign in 2016 and suggested to them that there might be a question at a press conference in the United States, in fact, in the Capitol complex, which I personally find somewhat ironic given the facts. That might ask him, the president of Ukraine, about Paul Manafort and what he thought of Paul Manafort's various adventures in Ukraine. And the question was never asked. And so we never had to deal with the event coming to fruition. But the theory was that by merely asking for him to answer the question, and we determined that she hadn't actually even gone as far as asking, but that regardless, that answer to that question at that press conference on American soil would be a thing of value and therefore a contribution under the Act. And of course, foreign nationals are not allowed to make contributions.
So if that theory were followed through on and we saw an active FEC effort to adjudicate or punish these actions, almost anything that foreigners would say in relation to American elections potentially falls under the thing of value.
Yes. And I think that's got two huge dangers wrapped up in it. I think the most obvious one is that, you know, once again, Chalup is an American citizen. If you take too permissive a view of what a foreign contribution is, you're spent a lot of time going after Americans for solicitations of same. And that obviously, I think, raises very troubling implications for American political participation. But it also, and this is the point that I feel sometimes gets lost, I'm not sure the Federal Election Commission is well equipped for the foreign policy role that this would imply. Telling the president of Ukraine that saying less than flattering things about Paul Manafort is a violation of federal law, I think would have pretty serious foreign policy and diplomatic connotations. And it gets worse if you think about other facts. So, you know, when we were writing our statement of reasons, the two other Republican commissioners and I, you know, we had a series of examples. Quite often, for instance, not just China, but also, you know, our friends in the European Union, you know, if there's a steel tariff that they disagree with, you know, under international trade law, they're allowed to impose countervailing, you know, duties and tariffs as sort of a punishment for that. And they'll routinely, and this goes back years, back to the Bush administration, you know, they'll target that at states that the president needs politically or congressional districts that his party holds. And I struggle to think how those would not be contributions if an answer at a press conference is. And I worry a very great deal about having the FEC in the position of policing international trade law, an area which I can tell you with complete confidence we have essentially no expertise in. And you could imagine worse examples, you know, ceasefires that are timed for presidential elections, you know, some of the things the United States does abroad in terms of, you know, diplomatic support to sitting office holders, both in adversaries and in friendly countries.
Yeah, I'm trying to imagine a situation in which other countries adopt our federal election rules, suddenly reacting to the manner in which U.S. politicians or public figures in the United States talk about what's going on in their country.
And we do this consistently. Americans have opinions about elections abroad. The example that comes immediately to mind is, you know, he wasn't president at the time, but, you know, former President Obama more or less directly backed Justin Trudeau's reelection as the prime minister in Canada. And I don't think there's anything remarkable about that. I think that's a well-trod American right, especially for a private citizen. But this way of thinking would ensnare a lot of that.
All right. So where is the limit then on a thing of value for campaign election purposes within the U.S.?
Well, I think the answer is found as it so often is in the Buckley versus Valeo decision in 1976, where the Supreme Court kind of had to look at the statute the FEC administers for the first time. And what they said, and it's in a footnote, and this is why any law students listening, you read the footnotes. But what the court said was there's a general understanding, back to the very beginning of our talk. There's a general understanding of what a contribution is. It's money, or, you know, it's money or funds that are given, you know, to a campaign. And I think that gives a reasonably good lodestar. You know, if you're looking at a statement at a press conference or a tariff that's directed at a particular industry, that's really not within the normal understanding of what a contribution is. And I think that there's legal reasons for thinking that that defeats the vagueness problems that raise all sorts of constitutional issues. But I also just think it's prudent, you know, for a small agency with a limited and frankly sensitive mission, to kind of exercise a bit of restraint and take the Supreme Court at its word that our job is to police the ordinary understanding of contributions and not to get too creative trying to inject ourselves in the foreign policy arena.
Oh, and respect constitutional rights across the board.
That's a good thing, yes.
You'll have to refresh our listeners' memory. They may have forgotten exactly how the Federal Election Commission makes decisions about things. This was something that the FEC resolved recently, but how would the FEC have decided to proceed if it wanted to go against Ms. Chalupa and her company for soliciting a question and answer about Paul Manafort?
So we have to go all the way back. The FEC is a very unusual agency in that it is, by design, evenly divided. And there are six commissioners. No party can hold more than three of the seats. By convention, three of the seats are filled by Republican nominees and three by, if not Democrats, then individuals selected and approved by the Democratic Party. And so it is today. There are three of us who are Republicans, two Democrats, and an independent who caucuses with the Democrats. Any Bernie Sanders aficionados will be familiar with this state of affairs. So what happens is that in any complaint that we get, we have to decide by four affirmative votes, a bipartisan majority of the commission to move forward with the matter. And in this case, we actually decided by a bipartisan 4-2 vote not to pursue Ms. Chalupa. One of our Democratic colleagues joined us, three Republicans.
So not unanimous.
It was not unanimous, which I found surprising since I thought the thing of value analysis was pretty clear on these facts. But that's the world in which we live. And we took that vote. And it very nearly did not become public. As part of the need to have four affirmative votes to do anything of substance at the commission, that includes finally resolving a matter. You know, you'll take your vote on enforcement, and then you have to take a separate vote to close the file and make the matter public. And so in this case, you know, we had a 4-2 bipartisan vote not to move forward with enforcement, which ends the matter. We no longer had any more jurisdiction under the act over the matter. And an effort was made not to close the file. And two of my colleagues, joined that effort and tried to prevent this matter from seeing the light of day, which I think would have been, frankly cruel in the case of Ms. Chalupa, who has, had to deal with a federal investigation of activity that I think was sincerely driven by patriotism in her view of the best interests of the country. And also very bad, I think, for the development of the law in that, these points about what a thing of value is, the role of the FEC in supervising foreign entanglements and other, high questions of state and foreign policy. We came very near, we came within one vote of not being able to even make a public statement about this. Or inform Ms. Chalupa that she had, in fact, been cleared by the commission.
Yeah. So, one, you have people who are the subject of inquiries at the FEC for possible enforcement action who may never learn whether or not that was resolved. So, in a sense, it's hanging over their heads as far as they're concerned, even if it's not. And then you have elections, you have campaigns, people who are active in politics who suddenly don't know what the in some particular examples, don't know what the rules are.
And one of the big problems in this area is that this is really complex stuff. It shouldn't be. I mean, Justice Scalia famously said during an oral argument that campaign finance was too intricate for him to understand. And I sometimes make the joke, well, then what are us mere mortals supposed to do? And that I think is right. It's that one of our jobs at the FEC is to try to clarify the law and make it accessible to ordinary Americans who are trying to influence their government. And the inability to speak publicly about really important legal issues like this, I think really hampers the development of the law and hampers our ability to clarify it and simplify it for ordinary people.
Alan Dickerson is one of three Republican members of the Federal Election Commission. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast pretty much anywhere, and follow us on Twitter at Cato Podcast.